Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Hello friends, this is F1 Explains, the newly upgraded official Formula One podcast, which explains the wonderful world of F1 racing. If you weren't with us last week, you might not know we've got a new name, but it's the same podcast. Every week, me and Katie Osborne tackle a topic, and whether you are a racing rookie or an F1 fanatic, this is the podcast which can help you learn even more about the greatest sport in the world.
And today, Christian, we're talking about three little letters.
I can do this. Right, let me guess.
You got this.
DHL.
I mean, they are the global partner of F1, but no, not this week.
Okay, well, they should like the plug. Good. FIA?
Not that either.
Fine. I've got this. Box, like B-O-X.
My friend, you are on a roll, but no, okay. This week, it's everything you need to know about DRS.
I was about to say that one.
That was next.
The first drag reduction system overtake had been much anticipated. The gap was under a second. Alonso would have the advantage down the pit straight. He was up to seventh.
Very good again, very good. In front of you is Button, who is trying to attack Felipe.
DRS, drag reduction system. And that, my friends, was the first ever overtake in Formula One history to use it. Fernando Alonso on Nico Rosberg at the 2011 Australian Grand Prix.
If you're an F1 fan, you'll know DRS isn't overtaking aid. In a race, drivers can use it when they're within 1 second of the car in front. And if you're a fan of this podcast, you'll know you can email us the questions you want me and Katie to answer. We've had so many about DRS that they filled an entire DHL lorry to get to us. We've had emails from Frank in Michigan, Darren in Tennessee, Nikolai in Denmark, Matthias in the Netherlands,
Ish in Massachusetts, Adam in Boston, Mitch in Manitoba, Canada, plus his 2-year-old daughter and his 4-year-old son.
Also, Daniel Porras, Larry Brown, Jade Hall, James Baker, Bruce Baldwin, and many more. Sorry we can't give you all a shout out. We'd be here all day. But thank you for your DRS questions. So we will be answering them all throughout this episode, which features 3 F1 experts.
That's right. We've got a few ex-F1 drivers who we call on to explain things from a driver's perspective. And after a successful debut in our tires episode last week, the ex-Renault racer Julian Palmer is on the way.
And we have a new friend making her debut on the show. She's one of the coolest people in F1, I think. We're off to Alfa Romeo to talk to their head of race strategy, Ruth Buscombe. Find out why she might actually be the best person to talk to about DRS in the whole world. There is a specific reason for that.
But Kristen, we are starting at McLaren. Emil Chinkaya is one of the team's aerodynamic specialists, which means she's part of the team that designs the car's bodywork, the front wing, and most importantly for this episode, the rear wing.
Emil, delighted to have you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right, let's go right back to basics. What is DRS?
DRS stands for drag reduction system. And as the name says, it is there to reduce drag, to make the following cars go faster and hence make overtaking of their opponents on straights easier, to spice up the on-track action, basically. In terms of what it physically is, it is a movable flap on the rear wing of an F1 car. So it's basically a piece of the car's rear wing, which can open and close like a letterbox.
Interesting. I like the way you say that. It spices things up on track, dear.
Exactly. It does.
Let's dive in a little bit more with the aerodynamics. Why does an F1 car go faster when the DRS gap in its rear wing is open?
By enabling the DRS, the flap on the rear wing opens, which offloads the rear wing, so reduces downforce and hence reduces drag. You can think of drag as a parachute behind the car, pulling the car back. When there's less drag, there's less of this parachute effect, hence speeding up the car.
And how much faster can it go when DRS is activated, Emil?
About 10 to 20 kilometers per hour. It depends a bit on the rear wing and the track, basically.
One of the things that comes to mind, you mentioned a parachute, right? And in my mind, when it's open, you get to go fast. And then when the DRS, you know, flap closes again, in my mind, based on that example, you would think the car would come to a stop, but it doesn't, right? What happens to the car when the flap closes?
So when DRS closes, the rear wing produces more downforce again, and hence results in more drag, slowing the car down on straights, but it increases the car's performance in corners because of more grip.
Now, we know Formula One, ML, can be unfair, frankly. Some teams have bigger resources than others. It's a team sport. It's not just about the drivers. And obviously, the cars make such a difference. But are there rules about the team's DRS? For example, Red Bull are right at the front, AlphaTauri towards the back. Are their DRSs going to be better or worse, for example, like other parts of the car? Like we know that a front wing, for example, can make a real difference, a better front wing or a worse front wing. Is it similar with DRS?
So yes, there are rules about DRS. The gap between the rear wing main plane and the flap when it's open can be maximum 85 mil. And they test this on track by shuffling a sphere with a diameter of 85 mil between the rear wing main plane and the flap. And in terms of differences of DRS between teams, not every team's DRS is the same, of course. Teams use different designs for their DRS systems, but all of them have in common that it's operated with a hydraulic pressure and it has a gas spring to push the flap back into the closed position. But the design of the actual, like, for example, the pod, most teams have a pod, DRS pod in the middle between the rear wing. And that can be different, for example. So the design can be different, and that makes a difference.
But that 85 mil is the limit, the boundary for it.
Exactly, yes.
And does that mean, therefore, that because that gap is the same with every team, that every team gets the same advantage when the button is pressed and the hydraulics open the flap? Everyone gets the same speed advantage?
No, it also depends a bit on the rear ring, how your rear ring is, how you design that, how you design the flap. So basically, you want the flap to be flat. There's differences in that, how you design that flap and also the rear wing main plane.
Adam in Boston and Mathis from Netherlands have sent us questions about what happens when one car is following another. So breaking it down, what's the difference between a slipstream, which is good, and dirty air, which is bad? And how close do you have to be to the car to experience each of those feelings?
The two phenomena are actually the same, but the key difference lies in the part of the track it occurs. We speak about slipstream when the car is behind another on a straight line. The lead car produces an area of low pressure behind the car as it produces more downforce, which draws the following car into this low pressure zone. Thus, the following car works less hard to overcome air resistance, known as drag. The reason slipstream is known to be good is because on straight line, you want less drag to go faster rather than more downforce because you're not grip limited on straight lines. Since slipstream reduces the drag of the following car, it increases the car's top speed, which creates overtaking opportunities for the following car. However, in corners, the cars are grip limited. In this condition, we speak about dirty air. The lead car effectively uses up the energy of the oncoming air and leaves behind air with low total pressure, also known as dirty air. since downforce relies on predictable and undisturbed onset flow to work with aerodynamics, the car experiences reduced aerodynamic performance when in dirty air. And this disturbed air also heats up the tires and engine more due to the lack of fresh oxygen to burn. So, and about like the distance, the car can experience slipstream from quite a long distance, also dirty air. However, the strongest effect of a slipstream can be experienced when a car is within, I would say, 1 second of the car in front of it, as this is when the car behind can attempt to overtake.
Amel, I'm a fan of DRS. I think it's improved the racing in Formula One. I think we'd see fewer overtakes without it. But the system isn't without its critics. There are some who say it's made racing a bit too easy. As an aerodynamics specialist, aerodynamics is your thing. Were you a fan of it when it was first proposed? Are you a fan of it now? What do you think of DRS?
Yes, it is true that it's artificial. I mean, it does make overtaking a little bit easier. However, it also depends, as I said earlier, or on your rear wing design, how you design the DRS system. So it doesn't necessarily have to give a benefit. I think it makes racing more interesting because there's more wheel-to-wheel racing, there's more overtaking. It's quite nice to see that overtaking, and this is what helps overtaking. So I quite like it.
And as you're talking about an overtake, if you see McLaren passing another car under DRS, obviously the team is happy because it's an overtake. But is that one of those moments as a aerodynamicist that you're like, oh yeah, this is because of what we're doing. This is because of that DRS, or is that do you feel really proud about that?
Yes, of course. I mean, DRS is a legal device, and we try to make that work as good as possible. I mean, you can design a good DRS, you can design a good rear wing. So the offset you get when you enable DRS is quite big. So this is an achievement. So yes, I'm quite proud when we overtake with a DRS as well, when the DRS is enabled.
I like the smile that comes with that, by the way. She was like, yes, I'm very proud. Yeah. And she's like, yeah. It's a team sport.
Yeah, it's great to see the car you worked on overtake another car, obviously.
Awesome to speak to Emma. Really grateful for her time. A lovely run through of the basics as to what in the world DRS is. Now, Katie, a random question for you. What did you do at university?
Like from my social out time? The time out?
No, I can guess that, but we don't need to get into that. I'm more meant course-wise.
Sure, course-wise. I graduated with a sports communication broadcast degree and a minor in telecommunications. Is that what you meant?
That is exactly what I meant. Did you get in any motorsport into that course?
There was not a lot of motorsport in that particular course, even though I went to Indiana University. Indiana being the racing capital of the world, I'd like to say. But no, I did not. There wasn't a lot of motorsport, but I dug it out myself and I worked through a college to find motorsport experience. Wait, what did you do in university?
I did broadcast journalism and I actually did my dissertation on karting in motorsport. So I managed
lovely.
To squeeze some in. And our next guest did as well. Alfa Romeo head of race strategy Ruth Buscombe's whole time at university was all about getting into F1. And she actually did some work on DRS.
That is just so cool. Now, a little behind the scenes insight here, guys. We ran into a bit of a problem on the morning we were due to interview Ruth.
Yes, so it was scheduled for the Thursday morning of the British Grand Prix. And with Katie being in America and me being in Britain, it was decided I should do the interview. You understand our logic. I had a slight problem getting into the track. So I couldn't do it.
Right. And it was in the middle of the night in the US. So I technically was passed out. Luckily, we have a reserve driver on the podcast. Regular listeners will have heard us mention producer Chris before. He's race fit and ready to step in at a moment's notice.
And that is exactly what Chris did at the British Grand Prix this year. So here's Ruth talking to our very own producer, Chris Browning Grant.
Ruth Buscombe, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So this episode is all about DRS. Your day job now is to look after strategy for Alfa Romeo. But back before you joined Formula One at university, your master's thesis, your big essay, was all about DRS. That's right, isn't it?
Yes, that is right.
How many words was that big essay? Do you remember?
No, I cannot remember that.
Tens of thousands, though, right?
It was a lot of words and a lot of numbers and a lot of diagrams, so we count pictures as 1,000 words, we can call it a book.
Pictures count. Yeah, it is a book. It's a book on DRS that you wrote. You did literally write the book. So you're a brilliant person to ask, why does Formula One have DRS, the drag reduction system?
So Formula One introduced the drag reduction system, or DRS as we all call it, back in 2011 with the sole aim of increasing overtakes. So we had the 2009 season, which was our last season with refueling, where on average we only got 8 overtakes per race. To put that in context, that's kind of the same number you see nowadays at Monaco. Then we got rid of refueling, and that upped the number of overtakes per race to 24. For the 2011 season, we made 2 big changes. So we started with different tyres. So we started with our current tyre manufacturer, Pirelli, and we also introduced DRS zones. And by doing that, you are giving the car that is behind an advantage over the guy that's in front. And the main reason we do that is because you cannot unlearn what you've learned. Rule one of motorsport.
What do you mean by that?
That is because over time, unfortunately, all the aero engineers are very clever, and they've developed ways to find lots of lovely downforce, which has made the cars a lot quicker. But unfortunately, that also means that there's a lot of turbulent air coming out the back of the car. So broadly speaking, it's got harder to follow over time as the cars have got faster, because it's much more difficult to kind of get behind a car. So what the DRS does is kind of offset that kind of credit card debt to give the guy behind a bit more of a shot of being able to overtake.
And what difference has it made to the number of overtakes? Are there numbers we can look at to say this has increased the amount of action?
27%.
Whoa, 27%.
Yes.
Oh, that little flap in the rear wing.
Yeah, exactly. And combine that with what the other introduction of the new tyres, which has created bigger performance differentials on track. We have actually seen a significant increase in overtakes. So now we're averaging between in the 2017 to 2021, it was around 40 overtakes per race, then got another further increase of around a quarter more, about 20% more in 2022 with the cars that are now easier to follow. So everything is all going in the positive direction for those of you that like overtaking.
Yeah, well, everyone likes overtaking. That's why we watch, right? That's why we watch F1.
Except for the guy getting overtaken.
Well, that's true. Yes. Yeah, that's true. The people at the front maybe aren't so keen on it. We know that drivers can only use DRS in specific parts of the racetrack called DRS zones. Why is that?
Couple of reasons. First one is safety. So when you are opening your DRS flap, you're losing drag, but also it's not particularly safe to do that round a corner, especially a very quick corner. So that's the first and most important reason is safety. The second one is that if we gave an advantage to the person behind all the time, it would be such a huge advantage that you would end up either ending up with kind of one guy that's coming from the back, just driving past everybody, and then it would be very boring. But also you'll end up with this kind of cat and mouse element, where if you make the DRS effect too powerful, the second that somebody overtakes, they're then getting DRS from the guy behind. And then you end up with this kind of twisting back and forward of positions. Kind of good example of that would be Bahrain last year in 2022, when there was the racing between Max and Charles.
Max Verstappen, he's got DRS, he's got a great run, and here comes Max Verstappen to take the lead in Bahrain. He's got in front of the Ferrari. Can he hold on? Not run too wide. Beautifully done by Max Verstappen. Leclerc now in second position, but he's still on the attack. Now he has DRS. He'll go on the attack down into turn four. He'll go for the outside. Oh, wow! Fantastic move. If he doesn't go too wide on exit, that was stunning.
That Red Bull was quick, and Verstappen was assertive right the way to the inside, but there's double DRS here, and Leclerc picked it up on the exit of turn three again.
As soon as somebody went past, the next person went past, which is actually why they ended up tweaking the zones ahead of this year's race.
What makes a good DRS zone then, Ruth?
So a good DRS zone should give you just enough advantage that you can get your car with an excellent piece of driving about half a car width in front of your competitor at the braking zone. So it should even the kind of playing field, so that you still need a car advantage. So it's never a case that the slower guy in front is then a kind of becoming the faster person with DRS, and it should still require talent and driving skill and all the things we love to see. So the kind of the power of the DRS zone, you kind of looking normally along a main straight, it will mean that you're going around a kind of a tenth or two tenths quicker, so that the overtake is done right at the very end. So we call them overtakes under braking. You'll see where, if it happens too early in the straight, one, it just looks a bit boring. And obviously that doesn't require as much kind of driving skill and finesse as overtakes that are done towards the end of a straight in the braking zone, where you really see people pass rather than just drive past.
Yeah, like you would on a motorway or a highway.
Exactly.
You don't want that. You want the skill of the driver, the bravery on the brakes. Exactly. And why do some tracks have more than one DRS zone?
It depends a lot on the layout. So some tracks we only have one DRS zone because there's only one bit that's even vaguely straight. Monaco is a good example of that. It's all very bendy, so there isn't really any space to put another one. Other tracks, we have extra zones to aid with overtaking. So historically, Melbourne, the old track layout of Melbourne, was the third hardest overtake of the season. And it was also one in which we would have like one of the lowest numbers of overtakes per year. So we'd have races where we'd only have four or five overtakes, akin to Monaco. And then we've added an extra zone, done a bit of track reconfiguration as well, to try to increase the number of overtakes there, to make it a little bit more of a race and less of a procession. So generally speaking, you'll try and put a DRS zone on as many of the straights that it's safe to put them on, up to kind of a threshold. So ideally what you would like is that the overtaking possibility is roughly equal in all tracks. For example, there's some places where if you kind of put a DRS zone on absolutely every straight, it would be too much because there's lots of straight lines.
You sometimes hear drivers or commentators saying that the DRS is too powerful at a particular circuit. What do they mean by that? Do they mean there that we're getting more of these motorway or highway style overtakes rather than the late on the brakes bravery ones?
Yes, and there's another kind of inverse issue you can end up with, which is a little bit of a paradox. We end up with a thing we call like a train.
Now I'm glad you mentioned DRS trains, because we have a question about that very topic. It's from Ish in Massachusetts in the US. Ish says they were watching a race recently and they heard the commentators say DRS train quite a lot during this race. So Ruth, what is a DRS train and why does a DRS train happen?
If everybody has quite a similar paced car, everybody's tires are about the same age, so everybody's kind of lapping around the same lap time, and they've all got DRS, we end up with a train where basically, because you're giving every single person in the group the same advantage, if you have a car at the front that has got a particular kind of like a top speed advantage but isn't particularly fast, they can keep the guy number two in the train behind, and then guy number three has the same amount of advantage over number two and four and five and six. And so you can end up, if ironically, you can end up with poor overtakes for kind of the lead, because as you say, it's passing on a motorway, and then you can end up with lots of trains of people ironically not passing because absolutely everybody has got DRS and it's only the guy at the front that doesn't have it and he's left out.
Okay, so as a driver, you don't want to be stuck at the front of a DRS train because you'll have a load of cars behind you, they've all got DRS to try and overtake you, you don't have DRS to try and defend from them. That makes a lot of sense. Let's jump off the DRS train now and move on to another DRS question that we've had. Mark Rayside and also Richard Beale, and they want to know how DRS is controlled. What is it that makes the flap in the rear wing open when the car enters a DRS zone? And Mark and Richard are asking, is it something the driver's doing from the car? Is it something that the FIA are doing remotely? Is it even something that you, Ruth, and your colleagues are doing from the pit wall? So how is it controlled? What makes DRS work?
It's all managed electronically. The very clever people at F1 have made a lovely system, which means that the ECU, which is the brain of the car, which is basically like a little computer box inside each of the cars, which is the same box in every single car, allows you to activate DRS when you are within the 1 second of the car in front. It's the same system we have for blue flags, for example. So you'll get a basically an electronic signal when you're within 1 second for the DRS, 1.2 for a blue flag, and it's all managed electronically. And if you press the button before then, it just won't work. It's like the close button on a lift. You could press it if it makes you happy, but it won't work.
I love the idea of drivers going along because they always want to go faster, right?
It's just a placebo button, you know? You can press it.
Yeah. So you're on the pit wall as a strategist. You are not in any way controlling when drivers can use DRS. That's all handled elsewhere.
It's all handled elsewhere, but obviously we know that it's a 1 second threshold, so we are trying to help them get within 1 second as much as we can do possible. And sometimes that means that actually over a lap you set a slightly slower lap time, because what you really care about is just the gap at this one point in the track.
Wow. So DRS has really transformed race strategy by the sound of it, because now there is an advantage to telling your driver to slow down. Is that right?
Yeah, or bias your, let's say, you know, kind of you've got a certain number of beans, and to bias your beans usage towards something that helps you. So, and it is kind of working very heavily with the performance engineers. We've just been to Austria, which is like a Mario Kart track, because actually there's three DRS zones. It's really powerful in Austria. Depending on the wing you run, it can be up to about 6/10, which, bearing in mind that the track itself is only a 75-second lap, is huge. And pole has been decided by less than 0.05 seconds six times in the last 9 races. 0.6 seconds is massive. And the detection for the first zone in your Mario Kart, bing, 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 is actually at the end of the lap. So kind of turn 9, turn 10, everyone's trying to get the detection for this, because then the detection for the next zone is in the first zone, and the detection for the third zone is in the second zone.
So if you get one, you'll get
bing,
all
bing,
of
bing.
Them.
It's like
bing, bing,
picking bing. Up bananas. So equally, if you overtake too early and you give DRS to the other guy, that's also then a problem, because then they'll just overtake you back, and then they'll banana their way away from you at the end of the lap.
Has anyone ever said that before in Formula One? Banana
me,
your way.
Year.
So yeah, it's all about doing whatever you need to do to be within a second when you go over that point. That's really important.
Yeah, and that's why we have performance engineers. That's one of their key tasks during the race, is to focus on how we kind of use our energy, just like, you know, when you're playing on a video game, to be able to kind of maximize for whatever you want to do, whether that's kind of attacking or defending. It's a really kind of cool, interesting element of racing.
Terrific insight from Ruth there. So grateful that Alfa Romeo's head of race strategy, Ruth Buscombe, spoke to us. And Christian, the big question, how did you think that producer Chris, now our official reserve driver, did stepping into our show's race seat?
I just think if you're a race driver in Formula One, you don't want to big up the reserve driver too much. You don't want them to be doing a too good job in the simulator, because otherwise you're going to be worried about your own seat. So he did fine, but I'm not going to go any further than that through fear of my own seat.
Is that because he's staring at you right now? Is that because he can hear you right now?
Might be. He was fine. He was fine.
Moving on.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So many DRS questions answered already, and we haven't even spoken to an actual racing driver yet.
And as this is a motor racing based podcast, it seems like a good idea to me. Jolyon Palmer not only raced for Renault, the team that became Alpine, but he's now a co-commentator and expert analyst on F1 TV. Here he is explaining why Formula One needs DRS with Katie.
I personally don't love it. I prefer racing without it. And I raced in the junior categories without it in GP2, Formula 2 now. And I loved the wheel-to-wheel racing when you didn't have it. But in Formula One now, we kind of need it because following drivers closely is so difficult. And the new rules have got better. And since I stopped racing, this new generation of car is definitely better to follow. And I think the dream for everyone is that maybe one day we don't need DRS and we can have more conventional fighting again. But for now, we need it just to help give the attacking driver a bit of a chance.
When you're the one who's doing the passing, how does DRS change racing for you as a driver?
I guess it can either make moves quite easy or make them possible, depending on the track. So if you take Spa with long straights, then it can make them quite easy. And you hope then to come through and use the DRS to make a pass without losing much time if you're on a bit of a comeback trail. Or you need to be clever and think tactically as well, which we're seeing more and more, where drivers are wanting to be behind at the DRS detection point. So if you get wheel to wheel into the corner before, but actually no one wants to be ahead because the driver behind is about to get a much quicker straight line speed with the DRS. So you start playing sort of silly fools down into the corner before. We saw Leclerc do that a couple of times in recent years with Max Verstappen. It was kind of good fighting. And it's all about squabbling for having the DRS, which is then the killer blow. And then in somewhere like Monaco or Singapore, you don't really have a chance to overtake without the DRS. It was pretty rare. So then you know that the DRS zone is when you're going to get your shot. So you try and line it up and make sure that you're saving everything for that moment. And think about a lunge if you possibly can.
You know, it's fascinating. You talk about DRS, and I think those little in Monaco, for instance, where there's not a lot of passing right and the zones are very specific and you're aware of them as a driver. The interesting thing is you as a driver put your helmet on, you think you're smart and you know where you're going to go and what your strategy is. But every single one of you drivers have the same thought. So then at that point, you're battling 20 drivers that are all thinking, oh, this is the zone. So how do you, especially when it comes to DRS, make that little bit of a difference?
I mean, generally in racing, you're trying to outthink other people. And there are smarter drivers than others. Even if everyone thinks they're smart, then there is a pecking order for it. I mean, with DRS, is you know where the zone is, but it's just about, does the other guy know where the detection point is? Is he thinking about backing off enough to get it? It's a risk sometimes to back off and let the guy overtake you, because then maybe you don't manage to get him back on the next corner. You've just given up track position. So again, with Sainz and Perez this year in Austria, they were fighting for that detection point, and Sainz did a great job holding Checo behind.
Oh, that close to banging wheels! And he says he's going to fight him all the time here, but it'll be better traction now for Perez. It'll be the inside line, and it will be DRS for Sainz, who will try and fight back for the last step on the podium. He's got the DRS, he's got the place back. Will they give each other room? Brilliant battling from these two. It's tight once again, applying the power. They're wheel to wheel, they're side by side. Who gives an inch here as we go into the infield? Sainz stays ahead.
And maybe he was just out thinking Checo for a couple of laps and it helped him keep ahead. If you're up against a really smart guy who positions his car in the perfect place, it's very tricky. But if you're in a worse car and you're trying to be really clever about it and you're actually doing a better job, a smarter job than the other guy, it can allow you to keep the lead and play a bit of sort of F1 chess out there.
One of the things I was just talking to my brother about this weekend actually was the fact of when DRS goes on. You mentioned briefly what that feeling, you do feel that acceleration. But in his mind, and in the conversation was, you really feel like you're like, you really zoom. And then when DRS shuts off, it's like, and you get pulled back by a parachute kind of a thing. Is that not, again, trying to put it into like real world terms as like a non-racing driver here, is that feeling that one would feel? Or is it just, you're already going fast enough that when DRS is on, it's just that little extra hint, like just you're accelerating a little bit more on the highway kind of a feeling to braking a little bit?
Yeah, no, it's like that. I mean, it's not like a parachute. I mean, it's a bit dramatic. That's when you hit the brakes. But
that's fair. But that's a very different level. Yeah.
Yeah. Shutting the DRS is just, you do feel that you slow up a little bit. Or it's more when you open it, then it's like somewhere like Baku, you're flat out for a long time. And then it's a 2 kilometer straight. After 1 kilometer, you press the button and you just feel the revs rise. You get a little kick up your back and you gain. It's like putting your foot down another 5%. But they're all down, obviously, 100%. So you take an extra little gain.
And a driver will take anything they can get at that point when you're on a straightaway like that.
Oh, yeah.
The need for speed, if you will. So DRS, of course, during the race is really important, but a race has to be dry.
You can only have it pretty much in the dry because the same reason is you leave it on in the corner, then you're going to go spinning. When in the wet, the grip level is so low, and even on the straights, you can have wheel spin, you can move offline, and you lose a load of rear downforce, rear load. So when you open the DRS, you go quicker, but it means that you have a higher chance of aquaplaning or just losing control. And you're having a huge crash. So they leave it shut.
Now, talking about it from a qualifying standpoint, what are some of the differences a driver might feel qualifying with DRS versus that in a race?
With qualifying, you use it all the time when you can in the DRS zones. So it just means that you go quicker on the straights, basically. So it's the same reason as you have it in the race, but without attacking another car. You go quicker and you have to brake a little bit earlier because you're arriving much faster into the next corner, but you kind of get used to it through practice. Then you go into the race and you can't have it until you're after a few laps and you're within a second of the car ahead. So it just means that you got to like recalibrate your brake points, and it's one of those sort of moving markers. But in qualifying, generally you're used to it through practice. And yeah, you're just arriving much quicker than you would into the corners. Like it can be 30 kph or so.
Julian, thank you so much for joining us. I think it's really special to have a driver perspective.
Yep, there's so much to get into, and it's my pleasure to explain it to you.
The brilliant Julian Palmer there chatting to the equally brilliant Katie Osborne. And Katie, with the help of Palmer, Ruth and Emil, we have covered everything from how DRS changes racing, where you can use it, the rules, how it works. Basically, if you've listened to this podcast, you are now officially a DRS expert. Congratulations.
That's right. But of course, if you think we've missed anything or you have another question about Formula One, no matter how big or small, you can email us, send a voice note or some good old-fashioned words to whyw@f1.com, and also tell us what you think of the show.
Well, that is exactly what these people did. Let's start with Barra in South Africa. Barra says, "Hi, Christian and Katie. I'm a big F1 fan. I'm a big fan of your podcast." That's very nice. We're big fans of yours, Barra. "I really enjoy learning about the technical aspects of F1. Always find myself chomping at the bit waiting for the next episode to drop."
Ooh, I like that mental image there. And Stacey Moore from Colorado. "Hello, I'm a F1 fan from Colorado, USA. I'm loving your podcast. So much great information. Thank you, Stacey."
And Shelby from Ann Arbor in Michigan says, "Hi, Christian and Katie. I just finished binging the podcast and I loved it. Thanks so much for helping me understand more about Formula One. You saved me hours of deep dive internet searching, and I've enjoyed all the guests. They're so knowledgeable and explain things so clearly."
Shelby goes on to say, "In one of the earlier episodes, you mentioned needing something like the Jeep Wave for F1 fans. My thought is, as two fans walk past each other, one mutters, 'box, box,' and the other responds, 'copy,' or they could respond with 'box, box' as well. Whatever feels right. And I have never seemed to connect more with someone's suggestion than Shelby."
Now, this was from one of our very early episodes, so you can tell Shelby's been binging the podcast. Katie, for those British folk like me, what's a Jeep Wave again?
So, Christian, the Jeep Wave is when you're driving a Jeep, and you cross by another person driving a Jeep and your hands are on the wheel, you just kind of raise a couple of your fingers. And it's just very subtle, but very firm. "Hey, you're driving a Jeep too. We're in this together." The Jeep Wave.
Okay, don't think I'm making this up for the purposes of the podcast. I'm not. Next time I see someone wearing F1 merch in the street, I'm going to say "box, box" to them. And I will let you know how they respond, and we'll take it from there.
Christian, you are one of those guys who wears F1 gear and merch in the streets.
Yes, I am.
If I came past you not wearing any F1 gear, and I said "box, box" to you, what would you do in response?
I think you're a bit mad, but I am a bit mad. So I'm willing to... It's fine. I'll take one for the team. I'll let you know how it goes. Listen, F1 Explains is back next week. And don't forget to check out F1.com. for all the information you'll ever need from the sport, F1 TV for race highlights and special shows, plus even live coverage depending on where you're listening to us in the world, and our other podcasts too, F1 Nation and F1 Beyond the Grid.
That's right. Me and Christian will have more answers and explanations at the same time next week from both of us and our reserve driver, Chris. Bye for now.
The
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.